Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. Join host Dan Melnick and Qasim Masood as they explore big ideas, limitless possibilities, and engage with visionaries, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders who dare to dream big. Get inspired, motivated, and find practical tips for personal growth. Think big, dream bigger, and ignite your potential.
Welcome to Think Big with Dan and Qasim. If you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell us where you live and what you do for a living.
Well, how you doing, Dan? I appreciate being invited on today. My name is Martin Lombardini, and I am actually out of Nashville, well, just south of Nashville, Tennessee. Yeah, man.
Awesome. So can you just tell me what you do for a living?
Yeah, so I am a entrepreneur first. I'm a product developer, an inventor, a speaker, instructor. I'm a pilot, to name a couple of things, but my day-to-day operations is pretty much product development, inventing, and being an instructor for the most part is where I spend most of my time right now.
So how did you get into inventing in the first place?
That's a really good question. The long and short, I'll give you a little bit of a longer one. So like I've always been a creative guy, but entrepreneurial minded and business and analytical. So I was always in real estate and finance, and I would find creative ways of getting things done. And I really kind of realized that I was much more creative than I ever even really thought of. So at some point when I had enough success and made enough money where I could try to venture out and try to do some different things in a different industry, I started to do it. And so that's kind of what led me to it was the financial opportunity because I had been successful in the other things that I was doing. And I had a dream, man. You know, I had a dream about my first invention was a device, which is actually a wearable drone. It's called the TAC-D, the Tactical Aerial Kinetic Device, which is a patented product. I've actually won an award from NASA Tech Briefs for that design and technology. And it is... It was really about changing the way law enforcement, military, and even personal safety can be conducted within a range of different applications. So that's kind of what got me started.
Got it. So in terms of your first invention, like obviously I'm sure that it took some time. So can you just talk about that process of actually inventing your first invention and, you know, actually how it came to be?
It's tough, man. I have a lot to say about that. And I'll say it in a different way. Maybe you haven't heard from an inventor before. You know, I'm a believer that all ideas already exist, right? So it becomes a question of, are you really inventing something or are you discovering something? And I think that at some point you have to be like a receiver, almost like an antenna, to be able to receive information from all different sources. And some of those sources can be from the beyond. In some ways, the collective unconscious, let's say. And I'm a true believer in that. And that's kind of how I got started in this idea. I have I'm not an engineer. I'm not a designer. That's not my background. But yet I invented this highly technical device with this vision, you know, of what it should be and how it should work. And somehow, some way, it did take time. It took several months to design it and figure it out. But it was almost just like a pipeline of information. It's hard to even describe. It was almost like just information coming to me about this because there's no good reason why I would invent such a technology.
For sure. So can you just talk more about the technology? And so I'm curious also, like, did you just sell like the patent for it or are you marketing and selling it yourself? Like, what does that look like?
So basically, just to give yourself and the audience a little bit of an idea of like what exactly we're talking about. So it's a drone that is wearable, and the remote control transmitter actually doubles as a case for the drone itself. Then the case, okay, which is the transmitter, is able to be put on your belt loop. So it's a holster. So the remote control transmitter is a case for the drone as a holster, and then also can be carried. And it opens up and how it works. So it's basically a wearable drone. It has the ability to have a taser on it. It has the ability to have audio, acoustic type of like high decibel. So it's like an audio deterrent function. So it's less than lethal. And that's for police applications. And then for military applications, it can actually be a self-guided grenade. So you can actually have an explosive charge on it. And then instead of just like throwing a grenade, where, you know, maybe if you throw it, Dan, you throw it farther than I can, right? But, you know, if we're in a in an urban combat situation, let's say like in Ukraine, this can bounce and deflect and there's, you know, people around. Well, imagine now you have this drone that you can take right off your holster, fly it with a camera directly to its intended target, and then press a button and have it basically blow up. So it's like a self-guided grenade. So that would be the military application. Now, as far as like, what am I doing to get it out to the market? Because it is a highly advanced technology, it's not as easy as some other products. And we can talk about some others. I recently signed a licensing deal for a game, which will be coming out this year. So anyway, I guess what I'm saying, it's much more difficult. And you actually have to deal with the Department of Defense, because most of the commercial companies that would take on such technology are generally government contractors. So like Raytheon, McDonnell Douglas, Northrop Grumman. It would basically be like an aerospace type of thing. So right now we're working with some military outlets and the Department of Defense to see if we can have some placement with this technology.
So from that standpoint, I'm sure it's probably, you know, because I feel like, you know, oftentimes the military is using like more like archaic, you know, software and technology. So how do you really get this user adoption for them to really say, okay, like, let's change what we're doing now and use your product?
That's a good question. I think that the way that it was designed and the way that I designed the technology makes it very much compatible with whatever the military is doing. And they do use a certain interface for, you know, let's put it this way. They have interfaces that allow troops on the ground to communicate seamlessly with air support and other support elements, whether it's armor and whatnot. So all of those type of technologies would be able to be compatible with this technology, so that it would just be part of the total package of what can be done.
Makes sense. So in terms of, I guess, all of your products, do you typically sell the license or do you market it yourself? Like, what does that look like in general when it comes to your inventing?
Yeah, totally. You know, there's a huge difference between licensing and venturing. And I think that I tend to like the licensing business model, because what it allows an inventor to do is to not spend tens of thousands of dollars to develop a technology and just get it to a point where it's you have a proof of concept and then it makes sense. You've done your market research. Is there IP, you know, intellectual property that's available to be gotten? And then you kind of put this package together and then you start pitching it to these companies and seeing if there's enough interest. And if there's enough interest, what I'd like to do is do a licensing deal where you basically say something like, okay, you know, the industry standard is between 3% and 5%. So every time they sell a unit, I'll make 3% or 5% of the wholesale cost. And then that will be my royalty. But at the same time, they're taking the risk of developing. Sometimes developing these technologies, even if it's a game, could cost $100,000, $200,000 in tooling costs for manufacturing and stuff like that. So yeah.
Makes sense. So in terms of, you know, all of your inventions, like which has been, you know, like the most successful and also your favorite?
That's a good question. I think Toss and Shots. So I invented a product. It was called Toss and Shots. It hasn't come out yet. It's been rebranded. I can't tell you the name of what the rebranded is. It's going to be out on Amazon, but for confidentiality reasons, I can't tell you exactly what it'll be branded at. In the future, I can tell you when it comes out, we'll be in contact. But what I can tell you is this, is what the game is, because that is public knowledge, because I have a patent for it. And what it is a cornhole and a basketball in one game. So it's basically a cornhole that has a basketball hoop at the top of it. So you can basically play basketball and cornhole in the same product, okay, two separate games, or there's a gameplay that integrates using the cornhole sacks as part of getting it through the hoop and then into the cornhole. So it's a new game. It's a way that you can basically play basketball and cornhole in one game, or you can play it separately. That's my favorite, I think.
So do you always invent by yourself, or do you work with like other inventors? Like, what does that look like, you know, for ideation?
You know, that's a good question. I think, you know, if you're someone like me who started completely green and, you know, you kind of start on your own because you just don't know who to talk to and what to do. What ends up happening, I think, is if you're slick, is you start to network with people. And so I went from starting and being an individual inventor to now where I have probably three different partners that I invent with, in some cases, different categories. And then I also work as a director of product development for an international toy company called World Alive, which actually just rolled out a really cool product called Freak Marbles. Actually, I can share this with you real quick. This was shown in Nuremberg. So Freak Marbles, it's already lighting up on me. So Freak Marbles is it's a reinvention of a marble, and it characterizes it. And there's actually skins that go along with this. And what I've been doing is developing new technologies that you can create into a marble. So in this case, this is motion activated light. Okay. So it simulates like a police coming to get you type of thing. So that's some other stuff that I work on.
So does your company buy out some of the products that you invent?
Not currently. Not currently. So currently I work with World Alive, and I work with them at a capacity of a project manager as well as product developer. So there are cases where I am getting involved in larger deals having to do with big distribution, let's say in the United States or in Europe, or certain types of deals. You know, there's, you know, like for example, we're getting close to just closing a deal. You know, like when you go to, it's called a loyalty deal. You know, when you go to like Burger King or McDonald's and they have like the Happy Meal and they have like little toy stuff in there. So that's called a loyalty deal. And we actually are just closing a very large loyalty deal with Freak Marbles. That's going to be in Europe, one of the major supermarket chains. So I personally, I don't, but I help other companies kind of develop some of these older streams of advancing their business.
What's the difference like when you're developing products for people in the US versus Europe or like other countries?
You know, I think a lot of times one of the major things is personality. I think personalities are really different in Europe. I think the way they conduct business is different. And I think that if you're American, it's something to kind of get used to sometimes. Here's something else that's really interesting, right? Sometimes the products. So like, for example, I pitched some cornhole type of games to some European companies. They have like no freaking clue what cornhole is. We're like, what the hell is this? Like, we're not interested. We don't play this, you know? So sometimes if it's a game or a certain type of product that's not so well known in Europe, then it can become more of a challenge to get a deal. So yeah, I think that would be the main differences.
So what would you say is the one biggest piece of advice that you wish you knew before you started inventing?
You know, I'm going to do a plug here because it goes directly to your question. So when I started, just to give you an example, I didn't know what I was doing or how to do it. And I actually spent like $2,000 I paid someone to have a provisional patent done. What ended up happening not that long afterwards, I came across a company called InventRight, who's the owner and founder of the company is a guy named Stephen Key. The co-founder is a guy named Andrew Krauss. And I found them and I became a student of theirs. And they really teach you how to be successful in this business with the least amount of effort and how to do it right. And the key steps that Stephen Key had created really made it easy. So what ended up happening is I became a student of that process, and it really enabled me to learn a lot more about the industry, about inventing and doing it successfully, specifically from a licensing perspective. And then what ended up happening was I was successful enough that they invited me, offered me a position to come back as a teacher and instructor. So now I actually am an instructor for InventRight, and I teach countless students all over the world. You know, whether they're in the Middle East or in Italy, they're in Romania, they're in the United States, exactly how to do this process of whether you have an idea that's just, you know, on a napkin, a drawing, going all the way to getting it out to licensing to a final product and everything in between. So I would say the best advice I would give someone getting into this business, is find education. And InventRight is, I personally benefited much from it.
That's awesome. So if somebody watching this wanted to reach out to you, do you mind sharing your website or social media? I guess best ways to get in contact.
Sure. So I would say if you want to get in contact with me, probably the best way would be to check out my LinkedIn profile, which is just Martin Lombardini. Yeah, my website, I'm going to be further developing right now because most of my inventions are proprietary and confidential. So when you go there, it just basically you have to have like a password to log in, but it is www.litconcepts.com. The company I have is called LIT Lit. And yeah, that would probably be the best way to get in contact with me.
So, Martin, thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely, man. Thanks, Dan.
All right. Bye.